Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome in. This is another edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, the Keystone Sports app. All your Penn State football needs are there. We're going to try to meet them right now. Dustin Hockensmith here with Greg Pickle. Our good friend Todd Sadowski from Fox 43. I know you've been begging for him to come back. He's here. This is a little blue-white preview edition, if you want to call it that. We'll start in just a moment with the news of the weekend. We'll get into a couple previews, looking at the offense, looking at the defense, things that we want to see, things we think we'll see at the blue-white game, and then we'll round it up with Ask Greg, your Penn State football and recruiting questions answered. You can go ahead while you're downloading the Keystone Sports app. I know you're doing it right now. There's an Ask Greg button. You can fire questions off there. We'll take them, read them on the air, and you get the special privilege of your name coming off Greg Pickle's tongue. How about that?
Oh, yeah.
So let's start with the news here, guys, and I'm just going to lead with the I would still call it speculation, I guess, but Penn State Pitt, probably a night game. The Pirates make this announcement that they're moving their night game to a day game to clear for a special baseball football day.
Do you think that was a oops, kind of let that out of the bag a little early?
Pittsburgh was not aligned on the communication of that.
Yeah.
And I think
that's probably true.
You know how these teams are, with holding it back until the last moment. I don't really get it, but neither of these programs has announced anything yet. The question, I guess, is, let's say it is a night game, does that change anything?
Not in my mind, no.
I saw somebody make a snarky comment that Penn State's going to get another whiteout.
Yeah, well, I guess you could see that. I mean, look, it would definitely makes it a more difficult environment to play in, especially for a young team. But to me, if this team has hopes to play in the Big Ten title game and also in the college football playoff, guys, it has its biggest test in years at the end of September when Ohio State comes to town. And Penn State hasn't played Ohio State in September since 2006. So to me, guys, if it is going to be a night game at Pitt, it's just more experience, more seasoning for when that matchup comes around. Will it make it a little bit harder? Sure, but Penn State still has the talent edge. Obviously, though, crazier things have happened, but looking at it this far away, I don't think it changes that much.
I just look at it as they don't have to give away free drinks to keep the crowd there at the end of the game, no matter what time it starts. And of course, a night game atmosphere would be phenomenal in September in Pittsburgh. That would be great. I mean, is 4:30 out of the question? I mean, if they move up the game at 1, I didn't know if, you know, maybe late afternoon would be out of the question, too. Obviously, you want to set it up as a night game if you're going to play early enough in the day, but it's not like they, you know, play the baseball game at Heinz Field. It's a pretty big city. So I think it seems to indicate, obviously, that it would be a night game, which would be awesome. I think, you know, look, we got two more years of this series. When you look at it from Pitt's perspective, this is it. They host Penn State this year. You better blow it out and make it as great an atmosphere as you possibly can and take advantage of having your in-state rival in your town. And that's it, because they're not coming back for quite a while.
I love it. That's why we pay you so much to be here, Todd.
Oh, great. Good thoughts. Yes, right.
The other thing that came from the weekend is not necessarily Penn State specific, but the whole NCAA rule on fair catches on kickoffs. I think... it's a beginning to an end on changing how kickoffs are. You know, I think ultimately kickoffs could very well be eliminated sooner than later, too. But this will be, I think, a step in the right direction to minimize. Football's got to do something here to start to minimize where they can. It's a violent game inherently, but there are opportunities to maybe minimize needless violence.
The first thing that came to mind to me, guys, was that Penn State may have just got a lifeline when it comes to their kicking problems. Because if Blake Gillikin or Jake Pinneker or somebody else ends up not being the type of consistent kickoff threat needed, it may not matter, because you might just see teams just calling fair catches inside the 25 over and over and over again. Yep.
Kick it high to the 20.
Yep, and just make them call fair catch and start there. So, yeah, I think it might be a blessing in disguise for Penn State, but I agree with you. It's ripping the Band-Aid off a little bit for the eventual, just complete outright dismissal of kickoffs. I don't know if that'll be a soon thing or maybe a little bit further further down the road. But, guys, I think it's probably sooner rather than later.
And it's hard to keep up with all the changes when it comes to kickoffs, whether it's NFL or college. I mean, you can't tell the difference anymore, which, you know, if you talk to the average fan, they may not know where they even kick the ball off from. I mean, they've changed kick it from the 30, the 35, the 40. You know, touchbacks go to the 20, touchbacks go to the 25. You know, it changes constantly. And, you know, you bring up it might throw them a lifeline from a standpoint of the kickoff, but you remember last year it would have been a lifeline with kickoff returns, because once Barkley got back there, returned a couple, everybody kept kicking it, like you said, Dustin, nice and high, trying to get it to about the 20, the 23. Ball even landed on the ground a couple of times. They really had a lot of issues once teams decided to say, all of a sudden, you know, right after he ran it back against Ohio State, that's when it all started to happen with kickoff returns.
You know, I think when it comes to the outright dismissal of kickoffs, how are you going to – so I do think the kickoff itself, as the kicker is approaching the ball, is that energy point. You know what I mean? There's an anticipation point to kick off a game, kick off a half, whatever. I just wonder what football would look like without that anticipation point.
I don't either. I just don't understand necessarily how many more steps there are until they just get ready to kick off. I guess that's the one thing I'll be curious to see. Will teams be able to elect – to receive the kickoff if they want to, or just take the ball to 25? Where do we go from here, I guess, is the next question. Because I think, as we've talked about, sooner rather than later, they're going to move somewhere a little bit more drastic.
Talked about speeding up the game. Look, in baseball, they decided we're not even going to go through the intentional walk anymore. Just point to the base and go take your base instead of throwing the four pitches. The only thing I can think of is, what are television stations going to do with the commercial breaks?
Yeah.
When you have those long drives and then there's the kickoff and then there's another commercial break. So, but yeah, it does seem like somebody out there is intent on, you know, they talk about the safety of it, and, you know, look, they've been busting wedges forever, right? And a lot of injuries have occurred on kickoffs, whether it's the guys blocking, the guys trying to cover it, or the ones returning it. It would be a shame to eliminate it altogether because, as you mentioned, Dustin, I mean, that's, you know, there it goes. Yeah. You know, you're ready to go, game on. So it would be a little strange to start a little differently.
It'll be different. Change is not always bad.
Yep.
We'll see.
Yep.
It's the Keystone Kickoff Show, talking some Penn State football with Todd Sadowski, Greg Pickle, and Dustin Hockensmith. We covered the fair catch thing. Penn State captains, I don't think there's really a whole lot to say about that. Three guys, Trace McSorley, Nick Scott, Blake Gillikin, the punter being the captain, I guess, but anything jump out to you before we move on from
there? No, that was pretty much it.
It's just the announcement that, I don't know, whether it's a formality or what, but I don't really care.
Other than the fact that I thought maybe after last year there was a requirement that 10% of the roster be captains on the team.
There's still time for that. Just be patient, Todd. Well,
that's right. There was so many of them. And, you know, and I mentioned to Greg, I mean, really defensively, I mean, Nick Scott's supposed to be in the mix, right, at safety, but it's, you know, nobody jumps off the page from a defensive standpoint. That goes to show you just how much veteran leadership they did lose on the defensive side.
Yeah, a couple candidates on that side. John Reed, for example.
Yeah.
Torrance, but guys who have been around. Koa Farmer's been around. But Nick Scott was a leader last year, was a special teams captain last year. Makes all the sense in the world. We talked about this last week. Greg, I didn't get a chance to get your take, or Todd, your take, but Penn State's wide receiver situation with Brandon Polk initially sort of being, quote-unquote, the guy in the slot, and then K.J. Hamler makes his little surge there, and he becomes the talk of spring ball. Now they're experimenting with Brandon Polk on the outside, experimenting with DeAndre Tompkins on the inside. Do these events coincide, Hamler's rise, with this experimentation, or do you think experimentation was going to be the name of the game? You know, I think I talked to Bob about it, Bob Flanders, last week, and, you know, you have to make some kind of fallback plan just in case, and it probably will happen. Justin Shorter just blows you away when he gets there in June. And now suddenly, if he is as good as advertised and you have these two towers on the outside, you have to figure out how to get these other pretty good options on the field. I suspect that this is what it's all about.
Yeah, that's exactly what my thought is, too, that, okay, you have two options at this point. You can either go four wide all the time and just take have less of a tight end role with one guy seemingly not stepping up. But the way they run the offense, it's kind of hard to see that being a consistent, you know, more than a, maybe a once or twice a drive kind of thing from Penn State. So I think you're going to see three receivers. And you're right. If Justin Shorter's a stud, we all know how good Juwan Johnson is and can be and has room to improve. So, yeah, how do you get these other guys on the field, Tompkins, Pohl, Kamler, etc. I mean, there's almost too many guys at this point, and it's a great problem to have, but, I mean, there's some guys we're not even talking about. Cam Sullivan Brown comes to mind, Matt Kippenhammer. I mean, there's some. This is a talented receivers room, and guys, they're going to have a lot of options and a lot of guys to get on the field, but you're right. If Johnson and Shorter shine like they're expected to, it's going to be tough for the rest of the guys to crack a rotation.
It's getting to the point where it's almost an embarrassment of riches. You got all those guys that you got to get the ball to, but I think it also gives you a window into what Ricky Ronnie wants to do, too, as the offensive coordinator. And Greg, your point's a great one about the tight end. I mean, if you've got better options, you know, and you can spread defensive coordinators and defensive teams out with all that speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we talked years ago about where is all the speed. Well, they're just got it all over the roster. I mean, McSorley has a special connection with Brandon Polk. We've seen him, what he can do with it if you get the ball to him in open field. You know, same thing with DeAndre Tompkins, and who also did a really nice job one-on-one last year, a little better than I thought he would, you know, kind of replacing Chris Godwin as one of those guys you can go to deep in a one-on-one situation. Trace McSorley, again, is going to have a ton of weapons at his disposal. I'm not so sure the tight end's going to be one of them in the passing game, so why not get some of these receivers on the field?
That's part of the conversation for sure, and then all the ability to give a bunch of different looks, whether that's number of wide receivers or what faces you see out there and what they bring to the table. Penn State will be – I think you'll see – and I think depth is by far the strength of this group here. I don't think any one of these guys jumps off the page outside of maybe Juwan Johnson, maybe Justin Shorter, as being a huge impact guy. But when you can mix and match and show them different things, I think that you're going to see that,
when
that from Penn State.
Right, when you almost got like a slot guy on both sides of the field. You know what I mean? When you know, defense can say, oh, well, there's the slot guy on that side, so maybe they'll do a quick screen over that way. Well, wait a second. We got two guys that kind of fit that mold on either side.
Yep.
Now you're doing fakes to one side and going to the other. I mean, you really are spreading them out.
I think it's going to be fun. I really think this is an indication of what they plan to do, and I think it's a good thing. One last thing. I think this flew under the radar a little bit, but Ryan Buchholz kind of ditching that defensive tackle designation and being a pure defensive end. It seems like an odd time, I guess, to do that, but I think he's better equipped to be mostly on the outside, on the perimeter. But you know, their depth at defensive tackle is interesting, and their depth at defensive end is off the charts. So I thought it was interesting that they would make this move.
Yeah, you know what? Defensive tackle is one of those spots I just can't figure out, guys. I mean, you know what Kevin Givens can do. You know what Robert Windsor can do. And after that, Sean Spencer has his work cut out for him, because you just haven't heard a whole lot about Fred Hansard, Corey Bowles. You would assume P.J. Mustipher can come in and play right away. But I don't know.
Seemed like Antonio Shelton, too.
Yeah, him as well. And Ellis Jordan's trying to work back through some things. So, I mean, there's definitely names there. There's no question, guys. But we haven't heard as much as maybe we thought we would about him at this point in time.
Well, knowing Ryan Buchholz and his ability, this move has to be more about what they like at defensive tackle as opposed to him not handling the job.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's done both, and he's done both very well. So this might just be a situation where they want Buchholz, you know, charging at the quarterback around the end more so.
One last thing, Greg, the Connecticut quarterback.
Tyson Famata.
There you go. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to say it one more time.
Because that's it. We'll never have to say it again. He's off to Clemson, so that's it.
Unless, of course, he decommits, and then he's back in the picture. Who is that, Greg?
Tyson Famata.
Okay, just making sure.
You got it, buddy.
We are going to look at the blue-white game, maybe get into some of those recruiting dynamics. I want to get your feel on the recruit on the visitor list there, Greg. But I really talk offense and defense. We're going to do offense next, coming up right after this. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
160,000 miles. That's on average how often you'll use your car insurance. But what if you could get help with more often? Maybe save a couple of bucks on clothes or at restaurants. What if you could even get rescued roadside when a tire goes flat or your battery dies? You can, when you're a member and your auto insurance is AAA. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about how AAA works at every mile.
Hey, Keystone Sports Nation, it's Scott Shirley, the Executive Director of Uplifting Athletes, inviting you to join us for the annual Gridiron Gala Saturday, June 9th in downtown Harrisburg at the Keystone Building. Features all-you-can-eat and drink, tailgate food, and special guests, including Devin Still, former Penn State All-American and NFL star, and most importantly, the father of Leah, who courageously beat her rare cancer and inspired millions. Visit upliftingathletes.org to learn more and help us tackle rare diseases. Hope to see you there.